This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Before we go into the science of near-term human extinction, let's get a different view, this time from John Michael Greer.
The Pleasures of Extinction? That's the title of a blog post in the middle of May by John Michael Greer. He's known as the Grand Archdruid of the Ancient Order of Druids in America, but also as the author of over 20 books. Here are titles of just three that might interest you. The Long Descent, A User's Guide to the End of the Industrial Age, The Ecotechnic Future, Exploring a Post-Peak World, and The Wealth of Nature, Economics, As If Survival Mattered. From Cumberland, Maryland, John Michael Greer, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
So the 2012 end of the world, it was kind of a dud, and now you think we've got a new replacement to worry the popular mind?
Well, there had to be a replacement. The thing is, the apocalypse fad, the apocalypse meme, as I called it in one of my other books, is very much a constant factor. People are always looking for something to justify doing nothing, to justify sitting around, because after all, the world's going to end and take care of it. We had Y2K, look back over your entire lifespan, somebody was getting very deeply into the idea the world was going to end next week. There are many Harold Campings among us, so there was guaranteed to be something once the whole 2012 thing blew over. And I think we've gotten it now. We're starting to hear a lot of stuff in the blogosphere about near-term extinction.
Right. Well, I sort of missed a little bit of that. Who is Harold Camping?
Oh, Harold Camping was the guy was it earlier in 2012, I think. He was a Christian minister who predicted the rapture was going to happen May something or other. And it was a big media thing. Some people donated a lot of money to him. He had billboards all over the place announcing that, you know, the rapture was going to happen. He'd calculated out some complex thing in the Bible, and then, of course, it didn't happen. And he simply revised the prediction for sometime in October. And then it didn't happen again.
Well, the whole Seventh-day Adventist church is based on that. I hate to say it, and so are a bunch of other churches, that it's gonna end right away.
It's any day now. Any day now for the last 2,000 years.
Why? Why do we humans have this perverse hope the world will end, preferably while we're around to see it happen? Some people are disappointed they died before it happened.
Oh, it's a really complicated thing, and there are many different reasons why people, I think, fixate on this apocalypse meme, this notion that we're the big generation, we're the ones who are going to see all the fireworks go off. But especially in times like these, times when there's a lot of trouble, there's a lot of economic crisis, there's all kinds of pressures and a lot of reason to think that we can no longer keep on living the way we're used to living. I think it's very easy to say, well, the world's going to have to take care of that. I don't have to get rid of my SUV. I don't have to, look at retooling my life to actually live within the limits of a fragile planet. No, no, no. The world's going to end. Don't worry about it. Pedal to the metal, baby.
Well, isn't there a fundamental difference, though, between scientific measurements that some of these near-term extinction people are claiming and Christian belief in the end times?
Well, of course, to a certain extent there is. But the problem is that these scientific concepts are being pulled out of context. These are hypotheses, okay? They're speculations. They have some numbers behind them. They are very uncertain. I think of the argument being made by, I've forgotten the guy's name, Light, I think his last name is, who has this theory whereby methane buildup over the poles will do X, Y, and Z and cause all life to be extinct by X period. It's an interesting hypothesis. It's an interesting speculation. Does the fact that somebody has said this might happen mean that it will happen? No, of course not. But people are presenting it as though this proves that we're all going to die. And that's where we take the leap away from science and into the apocalyptic mythology.
For a while there, the peak oil movement was also predicting a big crash, and we were all going to go primitive, like James Howard Kunstler's world made by hand. Why didn't that happen?
No, the thing is, the peak oil scene was and remains very diverse. There are people in the peak oil scene who are very much into next Thursday we're going to be in the Stone Age. There are people in the peak oil scene all the way on the other spectrum who are saying, you know, this is our opportunity to make that great leap into green technologies, blah, blah, blah. Then there's kind of the mainstream of us who are saying, no, actually, we're in a world of hurt. We are facing a long, difficult, grueling time as we retool our expectations and our societies for a world where we have a lot less energy and a lot fewer raw materials than we used to. And one of the reasons that the whole overnight collapse thing has, in the peak oil scene, has been kind of fading out, is precisely that those of us in the mainstream, those of us who are saying, no, it's just a world of hurt we're facing, you know, to use the title of my book, The Long Descent, we've been making predictions all along, and our predictions have been right. We were predicting years ago that, you know, the price of oil was going to ratchet upward to levels that economists said were completely impossible, 100 bucks a barrel. There were people not that long ago who were insisting that that can't be achieved. By the time it reaches that, this society will crash in flames, blah, blah, blah. That didn't happen. But the other side, the people like Daniel Yergin who were insisting that oil was going to hit a permanent plateau of $38 a barrel, that didn't happen either. So the peak oil scene is, again, the main currents of it have really tended to focus on something more realistic. Not the world is going to end, but the world is going to change in some very difficult, challenging, hard ways.
Well, John Michael Greer, you have your own vision of the downfall of industrial society, which you call catabolic collapse. What is that, and why is it different from climate-driven extinction, for example?
Well, actually, it incorporates climate-driven decline. Now, obviously, the main difference is that climate-driven extinction assumes that by some point, I think the usual NTE claim at this point is like 2030 or 2045, there will be no human beings left alive anywhere. I'm not saying that. I think that's, it is perhaps possible that might happen, but it's far from probable, and it would be completely unrealistic to claim that it's certain. So catabolic collapse is based on the idea that as a society runs short on resources, including energy, it starts feeding on itself. It starts cannibalizing its own infrastructure, and it starts scrapping things that in its unessential services. It starts basically just feeding on itself. That's what catabolism means. And so, in effect, it devours itself in the process of collapsing. Now, this one of the reasons I developed this theory is precisely that this is what we see when we look at how other civilizations have collapsed in the past. They've kind of fed on their own infrastructure, their own internal resource base, until there was very little left. And so my proposal, the catabolic collapse proposal, which is, again, not certain, it is simply my proposal as to what the most likely process is that we're going to see a period of between 1 to 3 centuries of ragged decline, various crises on regional, local, national, global scales, sort of like stumbling down or falling down a staircase, not like falling off a cliff, so it's sort of thump, 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 down you go, over between 1 and 3 centuries and ending in a dark age.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with author and commentator John Michael Greer. Getting back to that idea of near-term human extinction, how do you see that developing in the echo chamber of the Internet? Will it be strong enough to affect some people's life decisions?
I think it already is, and in a variety of ways. The question is very much whether it catches the imagination of more than a few people, and that's really hard to predict. It's like hula hoops or you know, any other fad. But I think there's a lot of people, now that 2012 isn't around anymore, who are looking for a reason not to deal with the future, who are looking for a reason not to face the challenges that we actually do face. And near-term extinction is a great way to do that. You can simply say, oh, well, we're all going to die anyway. Who cares? Let me go burn a few dinosaurs. Or whatever. I mean, there are various things that people might do in response to that, but I don't think most of them will be productive. It's, you know, it may be this, it may be something else. Maybe we will all, there will be this big announcement that the Earth's going to be devoured by a giant space walrus or something.
You know, it's so strange. You write about America's preoccupation with what sociologist Philip Lamy called fractured apocalypses. Why is there so much more of this in America than in other countries, do you think?
Well, you have to remember that Europe exported all of its religious kooks to the United States. That's what we call American immigration. For hundreds of years, from the time that the Pilgrims landed in Massachusetts, all the way up until about the beginning of the 20th century, all kinds of religious groups from Europe were taking ship, coming over here. And in Europe was just waving and saying goodbye, have a great time. So we ended up with religion as a primary organizing principle over here in America, when in most of Europe, it's an irrelevance. So we've got all of those people we got the descendants of all those people who are very, very deeply religious, who left Europe, who left wherever, to settle someplace where they could pursue their religious vision. And so we've got this weird society where, on the one hand, we've got the tradition of freedom of religion, where people can practice whatever religion they want to. On the other hand, we've got this sense that religion is very, very important in our culture. And so it feeds all kinds of all kinds of religions, all kinds of secular quasi-religions, all kinds of sort of religious thought and secular drag. The singularity is a great example. It's the rapture dressed up in science fiction.
Right. So, John Michael Greer, you're heading off to the Age of Limits conference. What will you be talking about there?
I'll be talking, first of all, about progress as a mythology, as a religious belief. The way that belief in progress has been the most important religion of American life for many years now. And that now that progress is coming to an end, we need to start looking at how we're going to organize our lives and understand the world in a world after progress. That's one thing. The other thing that I'll be talking about is the way that some of the old systems of community organization that were practiced in the United States before the beginning of our imperial age of excess and abundance, how some of those may be useful tools for organizing local community in the deindustrial age that's coming upon us now.
And you've taken some heat for connecting that near-term extinction meme with things like the Y2K computer crash. What are people saying?
You bet I'm taking it. Well, the thing is, it's just like speculative bubbles. Everyone wants to say this time it's different. This one, my apocalyptic faith is not the same as all these other apocalyptic faiths, even though it's basically the same thing, using, you know, slightly different cherry-picked factoids to justify it. Okay, big deal. It's the same narrative. The song remains the same, even though it's a different verse. And so, you know, people have been flying off the handle. There's been a lot of emoting. And that's fine. That's fine. I'm hoping that at least some people stop and look at the near-term extinction thing and look at the factual basis behind it, which is really rather frail, and say, okay, well, here are these worst-case scenarios. Okay, I got that. We've stacked up a whole bunch of worst-case scenarios, and if all of these horrible things happen, then maybe possibly humanity will go extinct. Okay, that's cool. I get that. That doesn't mean we should all just kind of sit down and fold our hands and go, oh, whoa, we're all going to die.
Okay, well, is there anything you would like to add as we wrap up here?
As we wrap up, I would say the important thing is that thing from The Life of Brian. You remember when Brian was shouting to the crowd, you must all think for yourselves, and they all shout back, yes, we must think for ourselves in perfect unison. Let's get past that. Thinking for yourself does not mean following something you read on the internet, even if I'm not, and I include my blog in that. I want people to ask their own questions, to come up with their own answers, to think through things like, okay, here are these cherry-picked worst-case scenarios. What does this actually mean? And to go through that and think through that and then say, okay, what am I going to do about all this? How am I going to change my life to deal with the future that I see coming toward us? And if more of us do that, I think we'll accomplish much more in the world.
Well, you've made me smile a couple of times, and I needed that. We've been chatting about ultimate things with John Michael Greer. He's a prolific commentator, speaker, and author of more than 20 books. Check out The Long Descent, A User's Guide to the End of the Industrial Age, for example. John Michael's posts are regularly at the archdruidreport.blogspot.ca, or find that link in my own show blog at ecoshock.info. John Michael Greer, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is EcoShock Radio. Get more info on the web at ecoshock.org.